In chapter 8, and the study on Jonathan Edwards, The Practice of Love, is the title. So the second last line of that first page, 123, love for God and for others are bound together. And then over. So Edwards realized if he possessed all knowledge and gave away all that he had, he would still be nothing if he did not display love, which is 1 Corinthians 13. The love he showed toward others would demonstrate his love for God. I suggest the love you show to others is love for God as well. So it's not only demonstrating your love, it's actually loving God when we love others in the way that Scripture has shown us. In that second paragraph, the last sentence, for Edwards, love was an essential part of the pursuit of holiness. And it talks a bit about who he was as a person towards the end of that page. Edwards was naturally shy and antisocial, one who preferred serious study over small talk. And the last bottom of that page, one of his biographers said, he's socially bumbling, barricaded behind the stateliness of the very shy. So he struggled to communicate, he struggled to relate in many ways. He wasn't a perfect person by any means. Okay, so the page 125, just before the middle of the page there, the last paragraph. As Edwards penned his 70 resolutions, his sincere desire to love others became a recurring theme. So a number of times he talks about it as to try and flesh out what does it look like if I'm going to love. And so resolution 13, resolve to be endeavoring to find out fit objects of charity and liberality. I'm not quite sure what that means. I know the author goes on to explain some things, but I'm not quite sure if you really hit on to what Edwards' point was. So if you turn over the page, 126, about two-thirds of the way down, August the 20th, Tuesday night, August the 20th. Not careful enough in watching opportunities of bringing in Christian discourse with a good grace. Do not exercise myself half enough in this holy art. Neither have I courage enough to carry it on with good grace. With a good grace. So he wanted to take advantage of the opportunities God gave him. He didn't quite know how to do it. So he's got this natural aversion and inability to really communicate in a more informal setting. And he found himself as well not being able to engage in that kind of communication. So it's good to see these things, and we can see some of these things in ourselves as well, where we might not have the comfort, but we need to step beyond our comfort zone and seek God's grace in doing that. So I don't want to bring anything else out of that section. It wasn't a great section. I'm not sure that the author of the book really got to grips with what Edwards was saying there, and I struggled. So the next section on page 127, the patient attitude. For Edwards, an important aspect of exercising Christian love was restraining his temper toward those who irritated or angered him. Okay, so he wanted to bring that under control, and it seems like he struggled with it, but I think we need to bear in mind, I think sometimes what comes through with the author, it kind of makes you think that Edwards was this highly angry person, where I think Edwards was getting down to the very details where, you know, in his own heart he knew he had crossed a line, but maybe nobody else did. So I think he was dealing with very sensitive stuff. So just before the resolution, Christian love requires godly attitudes and actions even toward those who provoke impatience or anger. So, resolved never to do anything out of revenge. Okay, and this is where I think it would have been a more sensitive thing, because the author says, from this resolution it can be assumed that Edwards could be easily provoked and was sometimes tempted to seek retribution. Okay, I'm not sure if, you know, I would say it would be a bit more sensitive, where in his own heart he knows that my attitude is just not right here. Bottom of the page, Edwards admitted that as a youth he could be argumentative, especially when he was convinced he was right. The desire to prove his point could escalate into a heated discussion that would damage his relationships with his schoolmates. Okay, now that's something of growing up, and we can learn from that. As he wrote, there's much folly when I am quite sure I am in the right and others are positive in contradicting me, to enter into a vehement or long debate about it. So he's saying it's folly to do that. There's some arguments, guys, that we shouldn't step into the ring over. And you get some people who are just contentious. You've got some people who they just are not really wanting the truth. And you need to be able to discern the difference there and say, fine, I don't have to prove my point. I don't have to justify my position. I don't need anybody to think I'm whatever. And you need to just pull back and let them demonstrate their foolishness without you joining them. So it, kind of in the middle of the page, it says he had a falling out with his roommate and cousin. And they just had very opposite personalities, which often clashed. His cousin being light-hearted and playful, and Jonathan being serious-minded. And so they didn't seem to get on in the room. I can imagine he could have got irritated if somebody's playing pranks on him the whole time. you're trying to do some study, and this guy's hiding your books and stealing your pencils. But I imagine Jonathan Edwards, looking back, might have also said, you know, I was a bit immature as well, even though I was. And then another friend, an older student, that kind of relationship came to end because Jonathan was too quick to give him personal advice. So it's just knowing when to speak and when not to speak. Just because something, you can see something is wrong or something needs change, it doesn't mean you have the authority and all the responsibility to go and tell that person what they should do better. So at the bottom of the page of 128, in his diary, Edwards recorded several examples of his struggles to resist the temptation to take revenge. And then the entry of August the 22nd, have not practiced quite right about revenge, though I have not done anything directly out of revenge. Yet I have perhaps omitted some things that I should otherwise have done. And this is where I'm imagining it. It's more of the sensitive mild type. You know, like you're not purposefully planning to hurt your neighbor, but you see his ox in the ditch, you know, and you kind of walk past his ox. So you didn't do anything, but, you know, you're glad. I'm glad his ox is in there. So there's stuff you could have done that because of your attitude and your heart not being right, you refuse to do. And so we can learn from that. So Edwards there in this, the rest of this quote, he's wanting the person to repent and be restored in relationship with him, but he's concerned that he might enjoy the difficulty that the person fell into in order to bring him to repentance. So he said, I want the repentance, but I don't want to be gleeful. And Proverbs speaks about that. It tells us, you know, don't rejoice when your enemy stumbles. Let not your heart be glad when he falls into a pit or when he stumbles or when he falls. That's Proverbs 24. So don't be glad. So, you know, we've got to keep that in our heart. God is judging. We've got to desire what is best for our enemy even. And sometimes that's praying for judgment, if necessary. You know, he's got to receive justice. So July the 11th, kind of at the bottom of the page, towards the bottom of the page. This day too impatient at the church meeting. If it was a congregational meeting, I could understand that. At such times, for one to manifest good nature, even to one's disadvantage. Okay, so he's trying to say, look here, this is unacceptable. Over the page, he's got an entry at February the 16th. A virtue which I need in a high degree to give a beauty and luster to my behavior is gentleness. If I had more of an air of gentleness, I should be much mended. So he realized that he must control his reactions towards annoying people in his life, those who would annoy him. And so towards the end of that section, he has a prayer on Saturday, May the 4th. Oh, that God would help me to discern all the flaws and the defects of my temper and conversation and help me in the difficult work of amending them. So he was conscious of failing in his communication, in his attitude, and seeking God's help that he might be gentle. The next section is gracious words. Edwards knew he must limit his words in troublesome situations. Okay, so when there's something brewing, here's my principle, limit your words. And so resolution 16, resolve never to speak evil of anyone so that it shall tend to his dishonor, more or less, upon no account except for some good. Okay, this is what you've been talking about. I won't speak evil about someone unless it's for his good. You know, it's some legitimate situation that you're bringing to attention, but otherwise not speak evil, but rather have gracious words. Okay, so the first paragraph of page 131, towards the end of that paragraph, it says, this resolution was part of his effort to restrain himself from speaking words that would dishonor others. So his strategy now that he devised in order to deal with his tendency to dishonor others, to speak in a way that dishonored them, was the last Wednesday took up a resolution to refrain from all manner of evil speaking for 1 week to try it and see the effect of it. Okay, I'm not going to say anything bad about anybody for a week. I'm just going to see how in control I am of what I how I speak and how I communicate. So is the bottom of page 131. In his diary entry, Edwards expressed the hope that by avoiding all manner of evil speaking for a week, he might develop a deeper sensitivity to the harmful words he had been allowing himself to voice. And so having failed to overcome that corruption by main strength, I think he just means by brute force in a sense, determination, he sought his way to achieve victory over his tongue in this way by saying, okay, I'm going to evaluate and I'm just going to see how much of a grip it has on me. Because as James talks about, the man who can control his tongue can control his whole body. And so a vital part of controlling our bodies and controlling ourselves is controlling our tongue and bringing it into subjection. And so Edwards is using that standard. He's going to go for this week and see if he's able to do that. So he determined that whenever he was a victim of another person's faults, he would wait some time before addressing that person. So when I reprove for faults whereby I am in any way injured, to defer till the thing is quite over and done with, for that is the way both to reprove aright and without the least mixture of spirit or passion, to have reproofs effectual and not suspected. Okay, so let me withdraw myself from this so that when I come back and bring the reproof, because it's obviously something offense to him, he needed to correct it, but he didn't want to have any passion lest he speak in a way that was unkind or ungracious. In resolution 31, I'll just read it for you. It says, resolve never to say anything at all against anybody but when it is perfectly agreeable to the highest degree of Christian honor and of love to mankind, agreeable to the lowest humility and sense of my own faults and failings, and agreeable to the golden rule. Often when I have said anything against anyone, to bring it to and try it strictly by the test of this resolution. So resolve never to say anything against anybody, but when it is perfectly agreeable to the highest degree of Christian honor. How are my words here measuring up to that standard? And is my evaluation taking into account all my faults as well? So that kind of brings a temper in the sense of plays down the emotion. That you offended me. How dare you? Okay, well, that's because I'm innocent and I've never offended anybody else. And so that's the standard. Because as soon as you step away from that and you know you're attacking them for not upholding Christian honor in relationship to you, and the way you do it, you've just undermined yourself. It's like affirmative action. The whole basis for justifying affirmative action is saying racial actions are legitimate, but you're going to get punished because you had racial actions at some time, but racial actions are good. So you know you're undermining the very thing you think you're addressing. So the next section is peacemaking spirit. So he wanted to be a peacemaker, and this he believed would be a manifestation of love. So resolution 33, resolved always to do what I can toward making, maintaining, and establishing peace when it can be without overbalancing detriment in other respects. Okay, so he wanted to be a Christian who caused no needless division, but instead helped reconcile people to one another. However, top of page 133, he recognized in his resolution that peace could not properly be achieved through overbalancing, that is, by sacrificing principle. So, for example, Edwards would have preferred to avoid the controversies that later marked his ministry in Northampton and Stockbridge, But in his view, at that time, what was taking place, there were biblical principles at stake that could not be sacrificed for the sake of peace. Okay, so we have to know the difference. It's not just peace. We can't. There's no difference between us. You've got to realize that it's Christian principle that we've got to uphold, and that does bring conflict at times because not everybody wants to honor Christian principle. So practical steps to become a better peacemaker, one of those was praying for grace that he would be more forgiving toward his enemies. And he comments in his diary that he could pray more heartily this night for the forgiveness of my enemies. And he recognized that obviously the Lord had done some work in his heart, so he was praying with sincerity and true desire. Further down, Edwards acknowledged his tendency to grow weary of praying a particular petition many times. And so the author says it's clear that he had persisted in seeking help to forgive. And he rejoiced here that at last he had been able to pray heartily that he might pardon his enemies. So that's why bitterness, there's no basis for bitterness, there's no basis for resentment, there's no basis for carrying hurts in the Christian life. There really is not. There's no justification. You could never justify it because that happened, therefore I'm carrying this thing. Christ says that's, you've got no basis for even pointing at what they did if you've got that, because you're stepping away from the truth. On another occasion, Edwards set himself to refuse to listen to gossip about others. So he doesn't want to hear any sarcastical relations of others' faults. But he says in his diary, never to give credit to anything said against others except where there is plain reason for it, nor to behave in any respect the otherwise for it. What somebody's told you about somebody else, when people fling mud, it sticks. And it gets into people's minds, and somehow this little thing comes up. And it might not even be true. And somehow, so we've got to discipline ourselves and say, okay, well, this is not really necessary for me to hear. But once you've heard it, how do I respond now in relating to that person again? And we need to be diligent in doing that. Honoring the name of the person where it's not necessary and it's not justifiable what's going on. It doesn't mean you can never say anything, but we need to be discerning as to what we are saying or what we are hearing. So the author says that Edwards was determined when slanderous talk was thrust upon him, he would refuse to believe it without plain reason to do so. By guarding himself from receiving potentially untrue accounts of others' actions or words, he helped maintain peace between himself and others. And so his effort was to try and identify faults in his character so that he would not unknowingly influence others with him. So if I've got a habit, a way of doing something that is not glorifying to Christ, I want to deal with that because others are going to be looking at me and imitating me, particularly children and and peers who might be looking up to you. Younger siblings picking up bad habits of what one is doing. So he said, further down that page, there are many secret workings of corruption which escape our sight, and others only are sensible of, but others only aware of. Resolve therefore that I will, if I can, by any convenient means, learn what faults others find in me. Okay, so I'm trying to be sensitive, so that can be done by having a close friend that you trust, and you evaluate their judgment, and saying, please, I want you to be open. It can also just be by scrutinizing your own life, but you know, sometimes you can't see what you can't see. Okay, the next section is a compassionate heart. I'm trying to be practical with these things. So he decided that his character must be marked by gracious compassion, free from all that was harsh or insensitive. Okay, so his resolution 47, resolve to endeavor to my utmost to deny whatever is not agreeable to a good, and he's talking about a good temper, a good demeanor, a good attitude, a good heart. But he then gives us this whole list of what that temper should be like. So it's got to be good, it's got to be universally sweet and benevolent, quiet, peaceable, contented, easy, compassionate, generous, humble, meek, modest, submissive, obliging, diligent, industrious, charitable, even, patient, moderate, forgiving, sincere. And to do at all times what such a temper would lead me to. Examine strictly every week whether I have done so. So that's what he wanted. Did I do everything this week with these qualities in all that I did? So I'm sure that would have been an interesting searching of his heart. So to pledge to be benevolent, full of tender compassion and mercy, to cultivate a temper that was quiet, not boisterous or overbearing. So he wanted to be humble, he wanted to be lowering himself before others. He wanted to be modest, not seeking to draw attention to himself. Submissive, yielding to others. And so it was a comprehensive list of Christ-likeness. And then over the page, 136, February the 18th, resolved to act with sweetness and benevolence and according to the 47th resolution in all bodily dispositions, whether I'm sick or well, whether I'm at ease or in pain, whether I'm sleepy or watchful. So he wanted to display a Christ-like temper, especially in times of personal discomfort. So what he's saying, there is no excuse for sin. There is no excuse for impatience. There is no excuse for anything that doesn't measure up to that. You know, we're quick to give ourselves excuses. And, you know, we kind of feel, well, it's because I'm whatever, that now I give myself a bit more liberty of how I can behave. I'm hungry. Yeah, you're hungry. Okay, then on April the 1st, a bit further on Monday morning, April the 1st, I think it best not to allow myself to laugh at the faults, follies, and infirmities of others. What context that's in, you know, I don't think you can not, you know, I don't know, it's hard to take that as an absolute and say, okay, well, what? Okay, so he desired his conversation to be marked by kindness, compassion, sympathy, gentleness, thoughtfulness, and consideration. Let there in the general be something of benevolence in all that I speak. That's actually resolution number 70. Let there be benevolence in everything that I speak. Let there be some benevolence. So some kindness, some blessing. It is number 70. Let there be something of benevolence in all that I speak. The last section, the resolve to love. Edwards knew he must be resolved to love others. Love is not a mere warm, sentimental feeling. Top of the next page. It involves an intentional choice of the will to extend the love of God to others. Love in reality is a vital part of the pursuit of personal holiness. And Edwards elevated the importance of showing love to others around him. Such love, he believed, must be shown in very practical and positive ways. Love one's enemies, loving the unlovable, things like that. The love that God, the second last paragraph, the love that God requires of all believers must be purposeful. It's interesting, I don't know if it struck you when you read this chapter, but, you know, it's, and as it ends off here, you know, love is very practical, it's very down to earth. And yet, not once are we referred to the law. Not once. It's vital that we know how to love our neighbor. And love is defined by God's law. I'm not faulting Edwards here. I'm just saying in the chapter itself, you think it's, you know, that would have come to your mind. You say, well, yes, it's got to be practical. It's got to be down to earth. And so there's a few things. I'm not saying it's what he said is anything wrong. It's good. These are practically how I communicate. But, you know, there's just so much in Scripture that's saying, fills it out and says, this is what love is. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. This is the great, the second command is like it. On these hang all the law and the prophets. So those are Jesus' words. Jesus also said, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do to them. These are the law and the prophets. That's what it's about. How do I know how I should relate? Galatians, all the law is fulfilled in one word, even this. Thou should love thy neighbor as thyself. Romans 13:10, love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. How do I know how to love my neighbor truly? Well, this is how it is. This is what it looks like. It's not just my personal feelings and limited just to those words that I will speak or the attitude I have toward him. I've got to know how to truly love my neighbor with respect to his protection, his financial situation. How do I do that? So I'm loving him when I'm fighting against excessive taxation, for example. Am I loving my neighbor? We say, no, you're not, because you're fighting against the poor because you don't want to pay taxes. Well, how do I love the poor? How do I love this man who refuses to work? How do I love him? How do I love this murderer? How do I love the victim's family? So I've got to know those practical things. It's not just speaking nicely. Yes, I must. I must speak kindly to the murderer. But as I speak kindly to him and suggest that he needs to be executed, that's loving him, it's loving society. So unless we know the law, unless we have a firm grasp of those things, we're not loving. We're kind of harming our neighbor. You know, when you're voting for Obamacare, are you loving your neighbor? Well, yes, because everybody's going to have free medicine. That's what I was sold on. I said, no, it's going to cost way more than we're presently paying. And we couldn't afford what we're presently paying, so therefore it's not going to work. So we're going to reduce the medical care down to what we can afford. 1 John 4:7-8 says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love." Okay, so what does that mean? If someone says, "I love God," and hates his brother, he's a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God must love his brother also. So these are vital aspects, and it's important if we're going to truly love our neighbor, if we're going to truly be benevolent and kind and gracious. Because a lot of times being gracious in the way we communicate is because the law is there. You can be gracious to the murderer. You don't have to scream and froth in his face if you've got a justice system that is going to execute him. You say, "Look here, I'd love to share the gospel with you. I'd like you to think," but... And a lot of time in families as well, when we've got a system that's set up where there are consequences for actions, we don't necessarily, we shouldn't get angry. We just apply the consequence, and then this is what happens for that. And so really, that's the law, that's the standard, and so I can communicate that in a very calm, measured way. But the law is important to the practice of love. So we love our neighbor by relating to him according to God's law word. But everything else that was covered in the chapter is good, and it's necessary to be conscious of those attitudes. Any other comments or questions?
I thought it was interesting on page 131 when he's talking about refraining from all manner of evil speaking for 1 week to try it.
Right.
Yeah, but usually I'm familiar with I become aware of my evil speaking after the fact. Was he like really cognizant of it while he was doing it like ahead of time? But I'm going to try not to this week.
Yeah.
But I guess the next page talked about by main strength. So I guess I'm just saying, well, how do I stop that? You know, I'm not necessarily seeing it ahead of time.
I wonder if it's as you're going to formulate something about something or some situation or somebody, you just... you're saying, okay, I want to think through this because I'm trying to filter this before it comes out of my mouth.
Yeah, I get that new brain strength.
Right.
I've got to really control myself in that way. But then I think, well, why would that be something you would try for a week? That would just be,
I should do that.
I'm negligent in this. I need to start doing this for the next... What?
Right. I think his week was an evaluation to just see how much how much of a out of control he felt his tongue was.
And if we're not walking around so ready to be offended and so ready to stake our claim and protect our honor. So we're more prepared to truth, you know, live out the gospel. And we understand the way he's lived out the law in those tangible ways. But it's about getting rid of ourselves in relationship, putting ourselves in the right place before the Lord and before others.
All right, to realize that that's why we exist.
That's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole point. We don't want to think that, though. The flesh wants to say,
I have these rights.
I have.
And it's. Yeah. And then the world is telling you that all the time. That what you deserve, what you should have.
Yeah.
You deserve this now. You know, you. You're 50 years old, you deserve a Holly Davidson, you deserve a whatever, you know, whatever they put before you. But yeah, that's right. Yeah, you've been working hard for all these people. I mean, you need to kick back a bit now. And
I think it's funny that the evil speaking that Edward was trying to avoid, some people would say, I can do this, it's the First Amendment right.
Right. I can say what I want. Yep. All right, well, let's spend some time in prayer.